Welcome to High Energy Health, where together we explore the leading edge of wellness and happiness. I'm your host, Dawson Church. By choosing this time together, you're declaring your commitment to a positive mindset, elevated emotions, and a great life. Thanks for joining me for today's episode. Hello and welcome to High Energy Health. I am your host, Dawson Church, and it is such a delight to be here. In fact, every single show I do, I'm struck with the privilege of just tuning in to positive media, positive ideas, positive people. You want to fill your life with them. I know I do read the news occasionally, and there isn't a lot of inspiring stuff there. So what I make sure I do is I make sure I give equal time to reading positive stories and positive information, because there's huge amounts of it out there. In fact, as a science writer, I read or look at dozens of studies every month, and there's so much good news out there, from coral reefs that are learning to revitalize themselves in the face of ocean warming, to remarkable projects going on to address things like income inequality and other ills of our world. And so if you just start to tune into all this stuff, there's a ton of positive information out there. So make sure that if you are inundated by all of the usual stuff, that you give yourself the antidote, which is tuning into a show like this, High Energy Health, and all the good news that is also out there. In fact, one recent study found that if you do that, if you're tuning into positive sources, positive people, that you, and this is the actual word that the researchers used, you inoculate yourself. It's like catching a virus. You don't catch the cold of misery and a downward mental spiral if you are deliberately inoculating yourself with positive messages and positive media. So make sure you really immerse yourself in the kinds of ideas we share here on the show. And the other thing that I recommend you do is you listen and watch each week with a pen and paper or a writing device in hand, because you know me, I'm never content to let you just listen to something and smile a big broad grin and think, how sweet and inspiring. You know, I'm going to be like a drill sergeant making you take action and saying, write that down, write up, make a plan, do something about this. I want you to do that for every show. And the third thing I want you to do is I want you, as you're listening to our shows, to go into the archives and send shows that would be useful to friends of yours to them. Send them links. Don't let that friend of yours who's suffering from depression not know the good news about all of the research there is showing that depression can be ameliorated with simple energy techniques, with very, very simple forms of self-help. These make a tremendous difference. So go find a show on depression and send it to that friend of yours who's depressed. If there's a friend who's struggling with some big relationship problem, find a relationship show and send it to them. I just checked, and this is show number 275. I know there are about 275 shows before that as well, so there are a lot to choose from. And I want you to share the good news. So don't just immerse yourself in positive messages and media. Go and share it. You have no idea that when that simple gesture, that compassionate gesture of yours, is going to rock somebody's world and give them the little nudge they need to take action and shift their reality. So these are all great ways to help yourself, help others, help the world, make the world a better place every single day. And just by being here, you're saying, I'm important. My peace of mind, my well-being counts. I'm taking care of myself by tuning in to High Energy Health. I'm learning. I am open to being inspired, and I'm open to moving my energy to a whole new level. So I'm so delighted that you're here. I'm also delighted to welcome our guest today, whose name is Meredith Heller. She is the author of the book Writing by Heart and several poetry collections. She's a poet, singer-songwriter, avid nature lover, and educator with degrees in writing and education. She also leads writing workshops. and also does them in person at schools, juvenile detention centers, women's prisons, and wellness retreats. Meredith, it is such a delight to have you here on High Energy Health. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. And I did write down the word inoculate, just so you know. I'm taking notes.
You are such a good student. You've already got your pen and paper out there.
I'm ready.
Yeah, and I just was fascinated by the journey you've taken. And there are lots of pieces I'd like to talk to you about in the next hour. But also the journey of you spent so many years, almost three decades, doing not this at all, doing body work. And how was that for you? And how did it inform your writing practice, your poetry, and then teaching all this to other people?
Thank you. What a great question. I love this question. I would say the core and the heart of doing body work, running a business, doing music and dance with children for 10 years, teaching music and teaching as a poet in the schools for 30 years, and now teaching women, the heart and the core of all of these is listening. Listening in through my being into another person's being, through me into the soul of the universe, into deep creativity, into the musicality of words, of movement, these kinds of things, listening with what I call the ear of the heart.
And were you listening when you were doing body work as well? Like, I mean, imagine you are listening intently what's going on in that person's body.
Listening through my hands, listening through my body, my hands connected to someone else's body. I used to always feel when I was doing body work that I was inviting people into a deeper experience of their own freedom through their bodies. And if they could have that experience of what it feels like to be really fluid and to open at all of the gates, whether it's neck or shoulders or hips or feet or heart, to open those gates and feel the flow that comes through us. If you have a template of that, then you can return to it, because that's really our natural state. But we get gunked up and stuck. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And in Buddhism, in fact, it talks about, a lot about that, that we all are these radiant beings. We just got gunked up and stuck and forgotten about that. So any of you is a way of reminding us.
Yeah, even in some ways, writing is similar. You know, I mean, even though we want to create beautiful jewels and gems in our writing, sometimes what we're doing first is unsticking the gunk, giving it a place to express and to work with it and look at it.
So a lot of your workshops with people who aren't professional writers and who don't have a history of doing this, and maybe they last wrote when they were in school and may have had a less than perfect experience while they were doing that. So where do you get started with people who are novices?
Yeah, thank you. So first of all, I like to explain that I'm using poetry these days as an umbrella term for this kind of personal, self-reflective, and expressive writing, where we make room and slow down enough with ourselves to notice, to give our attention to what's bubbling up here. What's bubbling up here in my belly, in my heart, and give your attention to it with kindness and curiosity and courage. And then to not write for anybody outside yourself, but to write for yourself, to write for you so that you see yourself reflected in the mirror of your writing, so that hopefully you discover something that was maybe hidden in the depths or through deep psyche, or suddenly you write something that you didn't know you knew, but you do. And that's when your writing really gets alive and it becomes a relationship, a place of refuge, a place of learning, a place of showing up in presence with yourself.
Wow, that is such a powerful way to look at it, because it is presence in that you're doing the writing, and then you're looking at what you wrote.
Right. Yeah. So first you have the experience of writing and moving between what do I know and what can I discover? So we're always making a little bit of room for the unknown, to not just fall into old habits and patterns of thinking, but to say, what's here that I can discover and dig into to find the treasures that then nourish me and nourish my life and feed all the people I'm in contact with because I've showed up with myself in this deep way, with kindness, with curiosity, with courage.
Well, I've never talked to you before, even though we live just a few miles away from each other. But already I can see that being in your presence and you doing that, you're a great model for it. What you're doing is you're using these body metaphors. You're having people get in touch with their body. So it's not trying to create something from the within your mind. You're having them tune into the belly, tune into the breath, tune into the heart, tune into parts of their physical self, and then find the messages, draw out the messages that those parts have.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. It's so true. So first of all, the longest section in the book, the longest chapter is body language, because I'm so in love with the body. And this is a chapter in which we both can write love letters or apologies or hellos to different parts of our bodies, as well as listen in. What's the wisdom of my feet? What is the wisdom of the back of my heart, and allowing that body part or that body area or even a wounded part, the sacred wound, I have a section in the book about, allowing that body part, that body area to speak to us and tell us its story. After 27 years of being a body worker, what I really learned is that the body holds all the stories. And if we give it the invitation, it will teach us the medicine it needs to heal and to be happy. And then within each section of the book is a subsection called body mindfulness. And this is a guided meditational journey where we tune in to body, to felt experience, to deep psyche, to muse, to angels if you have them. And we bypass the thinking mind so that we allow imagery and sensation and memory and idea to be populated from a deeper state of tuning in with ourselves. And this is what informs our writing rather than just thinking our way there. Because when we think our way there, you can write great stuff, but you kind of rob yourself of the treasure, which is the new discovery. Oh, I wrote about something I didn't know I knew, but I do. Boom, here I am.
So if you have people, as I'm sure you do in every workshop, who aren't used to that process of asking questions of the body and then allowing it to speak, because often people don't. Often people, you know, have a pain, they want to make the pain go away and take a painkiller. They don't like parts of their bodies. They're uncomfortable with their bodies. Their bodies might be a place they're not all that comfortable being in and living in. How do you get that flow moving?
By including all of what you just said. All of it is welcome. The doubt, the criticism, the judgment, the not liking, the I don't want to, the I don't know how, all of it is welcome. And when we make room for all of the parts of us, all of the voices, from the lowest and most empty and depressed and lethargic to the bold and brave and brilliant and beautiful, this is how we become whole. Mm. So the other piece of it is that I always tell everybody, both in the book and when people come to workshop, this is not a writing perfect. It's a writing practice. And the more you do it, the more fluent you will become in the process of looking inward, noticing what's here, and translating it into naming the feelings, naming the sensations. And once you name them, then they become something you can work with or even have choice. How do I feel about this? How do I want to move this around? Wow. If I can name it and put it into words and play with it on a page, maybe I can change things in my life that feel stuck.
So that's, again, that process of naming it, putting it on a page, seeing it looking back at you and then having an interactive dialogue with what they're sharing with you.
I love the line that the poem can look back at you. I love that. I will probably use that. I will credit you. Yes, the poem itself becomes a living thing once we've written it. It has a consciousness too that begins to inform us, and we begin to have a relationship with the poem and what we've learned about ourselves through the writing. And this grows us.
I was thinking about two people that I have talked to quite a bit. One is Caroline Mace. And Caroline Mace is a big proponent of structured time for writing. And for example, when Caroline is working on a section of a book, chapter one of her books, what she always does is she wraps up that draft. Then she writes the first few lines of the next section of the book so she knows where to go from there. And that's a powerful practice I found useful in my own writing. But other people really wait until they feel that strong creative impulse. And then when that strikes, that's when they pick up their pen and paper or their keyboard and begin to express it. What is your favorite method, and what do you propose for people that you work with, that structured time, say, you know, Saturday morning from 8 to 12 every week, or waiting for the muse to strike and then flowing with that?
Both, definitely both, and everything in between. You know, there's two ways of approaching it. So many of us need somebody to say, now sit down and write. This is your writing time. Sit down and write with us. And in workshop, part of the workshop time, we are writing in class. And then we always share what we've written and receive feedback. So for a lot of people to have that structured writing time in workshop each week is necessary for them to cultivate the writing practice. At the same time, and I think that's great, and at the same time, being open to those moments. We're finishing a workshop this week called Spark the Muse. So being open to the moments when your muse is what I call sparkled. So your muse is sparkled and you want to grab it by the tail before it runs back into the wilderness, because that's a wild thing, right? So you want to have both, because they each feed the other. When you know you've got that time to write, I think the muse comes more often, because he or she or they or it knows, oh, there's going to be some stillness, some sitting in this moment. Maybe I'll come visit them and whisper something into their ear, right? Uh-huh. Yeah.
So you're making time for the muse, and the very act of making time is a way of inviting it to come into your life, into your awareness, and start to talk and work through you. We're going to take a break right now, but please stay tuned. You're listening to High Energy Health. My name is Dawson Church. My guest today is Meredith Heller. Her wonderful, and I might add, extremely well-written and visceral book is called Writing by Heart. And as you can just tell, she is able to help you move into these kinds of states where you can access what you feel through your body, get it out onto the page or onto the screen in front of you, and then have it talk to you, learn, discover, and then take the next step. So strongly recommend her work. Her website is meredithheller.com. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after a break. Hello, and welcome back to High Energy Health. I'm your host, Dawson Church, and it's such a pleasure to share with you every week on the show and to give you these wonderful ideas and ways of exploring the magnificence that you are. We often have to take a step back from our busy lives and create time and space for that. I know for me, it's meditation every morning. I meditate in the morning. I spend time in nature. The busier I am, the more important it is to have that time of meditation. So give yourself those times of self-love, self-care, programs like this. Fill your mind with positive ideas. And hopefully you've had several ideas already in the first segment that you can use. For more on Meredith's work, go to her website, meredithheller.com. And her book is called Writing by Heart. If the idea of writing has seemed big to you or scary. This will get you going in little stages. And again, that magic of tuning into your body, as Meredith described earlier, and letting it all be okay, the triumphs and the disasters, ways in which you don't feel good at all, as well as ways in which you feel inspired. It's all available to you, and you don't need to be in any one particular place to start. So she'll give you a really gentle and practical solution to beginning and then seeing what this brings for you. Again, more at her website, meredithheller.com. So, Meredith, I wanted to check in with you about the whole idea of the concept that we have times when we are really flowing with our writing. I know for me, I'm a science writer, and I've written several best-selling science books, and there are times when I sit down there, and it just I can't stop it. It's like being getting hit by a tsunami.
I get it. I love it. Right. But other then...
times, yeah. And other times you sit there and think, what do I do now? It's like...
I'll never write again. It's the worst. Right. And yet it happens to all of us. And again, it's a practice. An accepting, a surrendering, allowing for the entire whole cycle, that the fallow times are part of the cycle. You spend time in nature, me too. I'm a total nature person. And you see the whole cycle in nature. Everything has a resting time, a fallow cycle. And to, in our society, in our culture, because we're going so fast, so full tilt into the wind, we don't give ourselves the slowing down time, the time to digest and process and assimilate, and even to be in emptiness. And that emptiness is as important. In some ways, it's the most important to the times when everything is flowing and we're on fire and it's like electricity. So we need both. And in some ways, we have to really almost fight to against our conditioning to give ourselves the fallow times. And even though it seems like nothing is happening, or we don't know what to write, or we can't access our muse or our creativity or even our life force at times, so much is happening. I read this Rumi quote the other day that was like, underneath the ground, when it seems like nothing is happening on the top, the roots are riotous. And I love this so much, right? So even in the fallow cycle where it seems like nothing is happening, you have to remember all new ideas, all new creativity, everything new that is birthed from the seed happens in the fertile darkness, in that depth. From there, everything new happens. And if we don't give ourselves that fallow, empty darkness, most of us tend to burn out.
So those fertile times are as important, and maybe generation of those fertile times.
Yeah. Yeah, allowing, making room for the whole cycle. And look to nature. I mean, I'm a nature poet. I look to nature to find the metaphors that teach me how to navigate this human experience. Nature will teach us.
It's powerful to do that. I know it also recalibrates us in all kinds of ways. One study just found that people in zip codes, this was a study of the whole of the U.S., people in zip codes that were close to a park lived longer than people with zip codes further away from a park. Another study just found that time in nature, even very small doses, like going to an urban park, produce an epigenetic effect. They're literally turning on healthy genes, controlling inflammation, and improving immunity. Various things, good things happen just from very small doses of being with nature. And so seeing how nature is fallow at times as well is a really powerful metaphor. And I love that image that the roots are they're growing in the dark.
Riotous.
And later on, we'll see the spring will come, and we'll see the seeds and the flowers and the outer cycle of growth.
Good things are happening underground.
Yeah.
And making room for the underbelly and making room for the shadow. I mean, this is where the juju lives. This is where the magic and the life force come up through. So making room for this too. I think that's what I always say. And this too.
You know, I'd love to find out a little bit more after we get back from the next break about some of your work with people who are really struggling. You talk about your own early struggles in your life, and they were pretty extreme. And I suspect have given you the ability to really connect with people who are struggling. And so you aren't just working with people who are externally having an easy time of their lives. You work with people who are really having a difficult time externally in their lives. So let's cover those in the next part of the show, because I'm really fascinated by the whole phenomenon of post-traumatic growth and how many people, research shows that 2/3 of people actually after a traumatic event grow and jump to a new level of self-transcendence. So we'll cover that next. If you're listening, you're listening to High Energy Health. My name is Dawson Church. For more on Meredith's work, go to her website, meredithheller.com. And her book is called Writing by Heart. We'll be right back after a short break. Hello, and welcome again to High Energy Health. I'm so delighted you're here. And for more on Meredith's work, go to her website, meredithheller.com. Meredith, this is a powerful invitation you're giving us to self-expression, to self-reflection, to the interaction of our bodies, our psyches, and our creative gifts. And what might surprise people is that this didn't just spring into being fully formed in your life, that you went through some profoundly difficult times early in your teenage years. Would you mind just sharing those? And then also how you then work with people who are similarly challenged, perhaps in prisons or in other settings where they've been confined involuntarily.
Absolutely. Thank you. So my healing journey began with a lot of disruption and trauma. I left home when I was 12, 13 years old and raised myself living in domes I built in the woods. This was along the Potomac River in Maryland, 20 minutes outside of Washington, D.C. I lived in domes that I built in the woods, in abandoned houses, in old barns. I had left home because the dysfunctionality of my home was so disruptive to my sense of self, to my quest for truth, and how to live in a way that felt true to my heart in a world that felt like out of integrity with the meaning I wanted to make in my life. And without many good options, I took off on my own and made home in the one place that I trusted the most, which was nature, and learned to live by the rhythms of nature, which helped me to listen to myself. But I was very alone. I suffered with horrible depression. Feelings were overwhelming, and most of my friends were dying of suicide and drug overdose. And I wasn't far behind them, but poetry and songwriting found me. And I would get the first line of poetry or melody in my left ear, like a lifeline, like a work permit that said, stay here, find a way to name and shape the overwhelming feelings into something that you can see and work with. And I'm talking about feelings of loss and abandonment and trauma and longing for deeper meaning. And so poetry became my closest companion and truly what saved my life. My first book, Write a Poem, Save Your Life, goes into the tip of the iceberg of my journey, but this. So over the years of writing poetry and music, I began to get clear that this was my path and that once I really had a sense of my path and who I am, how do I serve? How do I offer? How do I share this? So I became a poet in the schools, working with at-risk kids and highly creative kids who were slipping through the cracks, because I had an epiphany hiking one day that I wanted to get to those kids who were like me before they gave up on themselves and society the way that I had. I didn't want people to suffer, and I didn't have any help. So I wanted to be there to guide and point the direction for others and say, here, grab your journal, grab your pen. This is a pathway. Writing is a pathway home to self-love, to self-respect, to self-valuing, to friendship with ourselves. And from here, anything is possible. So I taught in the schools, I taught at juvenile hall, and I teach at women's prisons. And working with the women in the prisons is incredible experience. They are so real and genuine and willing to own what they would have liked to do differently, make new choices, be willing to grow, be real about who they are and what's really happening. The women in the prisons that I work with all get a copy of my book. So I had an amazing moment during one of the last workshops I was teaching, and the incarcerated women said, "Oh, Meredith, we're going to miss you so much. We've loved being in workshop with you and writing, but we have your book now." They held my book to their chest, and I just started crying. "We have your book now, and we're going to keep writing." And I thought, this is it. One new poet at a time, one new poem at a time. This is how we heal the world. And it's bigger than me. And I am, you know, in service to this pathway of healing.
Just share with us the story of perhaps one of those women and the change that this made in her life.
There are actually a few women who come to workshop without a lot of self-confidence and with a lot of heavy conditioning around putting others' needs before their own. And I think this is very common for maybe for all of us, but definitely for women. And one of the things that I really hold space for is this learning to turn toward ourselves, for women to listen to their needs first. So many women who have come to workshop say that they go back into their lives with walking that workshop into their lives, standing taller, knowing what they think and feel, being able to ask for what they want, being able to ask for what they need, saying no when it's no, saying yes when it's yes, and knowing that there's a whole spectrum that lives between those, and that we have to be resourced before we can really give to others. So many stories of this, of women who say, "I walk out of workshop really tall, really knowing who I am and being able to show up in a way that allows me to respect and value myself." Mm. This is so important.
Mm, absolutely. What a metamorphosis that must be. And it is so powerful to see that people can find those parts of themselves, even though they may have lost them a long time ago. They can rediscover them through this process of self-reflection, mindfulness, and writing. So I love that story. And if you can get to them early as well, like in juvenile hall, when they haven't got 40 or 50 years of conditioning that is set in there, then their lives might take a whole different trajectory.
Yeah, most of the kids in juvenile hall come out of such deep trauma that it's a different kind of conditioning, you know, that makes them edgy and distrustful of others. And they've usually experienced so much loss. A lot of the kids that I was working with came out of gangs and had their friends killed and, you know, had been stabbed and shot and The hard part with the kids in juvenile hall was that they often wanted to change, but they didn't feel like they had a lot of options. But what I would tell them is that their imaginations and their inner world is the one place where they get to make the rules. So to make the rules work for them, you know, even when they're locked down.
Yeah, absolutely. And your inner world can be a powerful determinant of what happens outside of yourself. And when you finally have a sense of what that world is and a sense of being in control there, things start to change outside of you. I want to just spend a few moments chatting about something that struck me about your work as well. And you're pretty strong in the language you use about this. You say that the pace of our current society and life is insane.
I hold to that still.
Tell us more about that.
Gosh, you know, I was just texting with a friend of mine this morning, and she said, life is dot, dot, dot. She said, I don't even know the word to call it right now. And I wrote back and I said, life is beautiful and wildly mysterious. And the world has gone mad. And so how, just what you were just saying about how the world that we have inside can affect and impact what happens in the world around us and how we relate to and make contact with the world. So even when everything is in chaos, which it really feels like it is right now, the world is a very chaotic place. How do we make sanctuary within ourselves? How do we feed and nourish ourselves in a way that values and honors and has curiosity and reverence for life itself, which we are so lucky to be a part of, to be an expression of life force. And for me, what, the crazier the world gets, the more fiercely I have to love. My next workshop, which starts the middle of April, is called Love Warrior. Times of wild chaos require wild love. Point your heart compass in the direction of what you truly love. Mary Oliver, when everything started breaking down in the world, Mary Oliver, one of my favorite poets, so many of our favorite poets, said, when everybody was saying, you know, stop the war and resist, she said, wage peace. And that changed my life. Wage peace. I learned, point myself, give myself to what I love, to what I believe in, to what I value in this life. Because we always have a choice about where we put our energy. So I can use it to resist, or I can use it to grow more of what feeds me and nourishes me, how I serve and show up with others, what I contribute to the world. Each of us matters. Our voice, our unique story matters. So how do we keep ourselves nourished and resourced so we can weave our thread through this whole living community of life?
And if we are nourished and resourced and we are threading through that community of life, then we become an enormously positive force along with millions of other people who are that positive force as well. And again, those people don't make the news headlines, but there are millions of them. And the positive force for good in the world is enormous. And the macro statistics all tell us that. We're going to take a break right now, but please stay tuned. You're listening to High Energy Health. Find out more about Meredith's work at our website, meredithheller.com. We'll be right back after a break. Hello and welcome back to our final segment in this High Energy Health program. It's good to have you here. And to find out more about Meredith's work, go to her website, meredithheller.com. I also encourage you to contemplate that regular practice that she advocates. You'll find in the book there are lots of exercises. There are those body-mind cues you'll get in advance, so it makes it guided, makes it not scary. She has examples of poems that she and others have written, so it shows you what arises out of that space you make. And so you'll find it a very approachable way to starting to write and then seeing the effects and getting feedback from your writing and seeing the effects in your own life. So again, the book is Writing by Heart, and you'll find more at her website, meredithheller.com. So in this last segment, Meredith, let's talk about writing and how it can help us heal. There are parts of our lives that are often stuck where we try to find relief, try to make progress, and it just hasn't worked. How can writing help?
Thank you. For one thing, one of the great things about writing, this kind of personal, self-reflective, expressive writing, where we're doing it for ourselves rather than, you know, I'm writing to have this piece published, or, you know, I'm going to share it with a small group of people whom I trust. This kind of writing is a place where we can be absolutely and completely honest. And there's not a lot of places in our lives where we can be absolutely and completely honest for many of us. So to be able to write not just what is going on with me, but the deeper layers, what's really going on with me. Not just how am I, but how am I really doing? And to honestly address this in ourselves. And if you don't want anybody to ever find it, rip it up or burn it, throw it away. That's fine. So when we take what is often overwhelming, traumatic, painful, hurtful, and most of us, in order to survive, push all that stuff away, numb ourselves to it, push it down, hide it, and all of that energy we take holding it at bay locks up the energy that we could be using in living creatively and loving creatively and making lives that feed us and serve others. So when we take the pain and the hurt and the overwhelm out of its hiding place, in the company of ourselves, in the company of our own kindness and our own friendship with ourselves, and we name those things that are really bubbling under the surface, that maybe drain our energy from being able to show up fully in our lives the way we're capable of. We begin to name those and be honest with ourselves. In effect, bring it out of the darkness into the light of our own loving attention. And from here, change can happen when we can name it. Yeah.
You have an example of a person who did and then healed physically from a disease?
I can't think of one offhand, but so many women who come to workshop who have aching joints or lower back, or, you know, even in the way we hold our bodies, as we begin to bring what's secret out into the field of speaking it and voicing it and having it be witnessed in workshop by other people who you feel safe with, it begins to take the wounding and the hurt out of the place of shame and hiding. And we learn that commonalities, that we're not alone, that for the most part, as human beings, we have the same hopes and fears and wounds and desires and loves. So we learn that we're not alone in workshop as we begin taking the pieces that perhaps we were hiding or pushing down because they were too painful. And the other piece is what we were talking about before, is that while we learn that the commonalities and we're not alone, we also learn that our story matters. Our voice matters. And for so many of us, whatever the wounding or the trauma has been, it's not the obstacle to the path. It is the path. You know, I mean, so to go into the wounding and the pain and what hurts and bring it into the light and own it and claim it and begin to say, wow, this is my path. How do I show up for myself in this moment with this thing that is happening? How do I attend to this, to myself, to my life, with kindness, with friendship, with dignity? This is my path.
And it opens up the path to growth. I also want to emphasize something that Meredith said, as you are busy taking notes over there and having an action plan to apply this in your own life. She talked about how those messy, difficult parts of our lives have all this energy that is bound up in them. And when we write, when we become mindful, when we self-reflect, when we give ourselves a chance to let those express, all the energy that was bound up in those structures in our psyche, in our body, that energy gets released, and it gets released for positive movement and for healing. So just remember that these things that seem so difficult for you are actually, as she says, they are the path. They're not necessarily your obstacles. Meredith, what a joy to connect with you. Thank you so very much. And thank you, everyone, for joining Meredith and I in this exploration of how you can take those parts of yourself that may seem so difficult and turn them, as Meredith says, into the path. Keep doing that. I look forward to connecting with you on the next show. And till then, love yourself enough to surround yourself with as many positive people, images, media, and ideas as you possibly can. Much love, every blessing. See you next time round.
Thank you so much.